I'm Michael Kist of Bleeding Green Nation, and I invite you, gentle listener, to join us for the best analysis of the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles in the business. BGN Radio provides you with the most informative preview shows, and the Kist and Solak show dives deep into all the scheme and X and O details you could ever want. Plus discussions with the industry's brightest minds, including former NFL players, and press conferences from the Eagles coaching staff to keep you up to date and informed every step of the way. Subscribe to Bleeding Green Nation today. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Playing a long drive, there it is, number 500, the career 500th home run for Michael Jack Smith.
Rollins slides, Rollins has won it, they stream out of the dugout, yeah. Rollins by yeah. Near third, this game is over.
It is out of here, 50th home run of the year for Ryan Howard.
Ruiz out to get it. The throw from his knees. It's in time. And it's a no-hitter. Unbelievable. Ruiz and Helen.
Oh, Chase is going to keep going. And he's safe at home plate.
Wow.
Chase Utley, you are the man.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
Now batting for the Phillies, second baseman John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 206. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight and NumberFire.com. Don't forget, you can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. And coming up, we're going to talk about the Phillies-Washington Nationals series this week in the nation's capital. Man, it was looking pretty depressing for a little while there. And then Aaron Nola to the rescue. We're going to talk all about the big Aaron Nola outing, the Phillies, and the National League playoff picture coming up with Mike Farren, good friend of the podcast from SiriusXM. He also does the pre- and post-game radio shows for the Arizona Diamondbacks out west, so we're going to talk to him coming up in just a few minutes. Plus, I will have your stat of the week. But once again, folks, I wanted to remind you, if you haven't done so already, make sure that you subscribe to this podcast by subscribing to the Good Fight podcast feed. You can find it on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Look for the Good Fight podcast feed. If you don't find the Good Fight podcast feed, you might find it under Hittin' Season still. Depends on the podcast maker. But what you're looking for is the Good Fight podcast feed, and you will get this episode of Hittin' Season, as well as the Sunday night edition of Hittin' Season. Eventually, we're going to be moving Continued Success over to that podcast feed full-time. Right now, Continued Success is going to continue to be a Patreon-only podcast just for a little while longer, another few weeks or so until we're fully ramped up here. So we wanted to make sure that our Patreon listeners knew that Continued Success would be exclusively theirs for just a little while longer, but you'll also get the Dirty Inning as part of the Good Fight podcast feed. And I strongly urge you, if you haven't done so already, please, for me, as a favor, rate the show 5 stars and give it a review, if you wouldn't mind. That would help us out a lot on those iTunes rankings. When we first switched over to the Good Fight podcast feed last week, we were in the top 100 of sports podcasts on Apple Podcasts. And a lot of that is because when you switch over to a new feed, it recognizes a whole slew of new subscribers and it jacks you way up on that list. But what I'd like to do is just to continue to grow that. I think we've got about 250 or 270 ratings. I'd love to get up to 500 ratings at some point here in the next 6 months or so. And so let's see if we can't make that happen. A 5-star rating and a review, if you wouldn't mind. And again, subscribe to this podcast. Also subscribe, if you're an Eagles fan, to the Bleeding Green Nation podcast. I'm also hosting a weekly Eagles preview show with Brandon Lee Gouton for BGN Radio, the reborn BGN Radio. So make sure you are subscribing to the Bleeding Green Nation podcast. You'll get a bunch of great Eagles shows there. If you're a Sixers fan, go to Liberty Ballers podcast feed. And if you're a Flyers fan, you want to go to Broad Street Hockey and go check out their podcast feed as well. You'll get all the great Flyers podcasts that they have to offer. All of us here at the SB Nation family putting together these podcasts for you to enjoy. And we hope that you will do that. Let's get into the show now here. And I was expecting here on episode number 206 to have to start off in a really bad mood because of the way things started out here in the nation's capital and the way this team has played over the last 3 weeks. And really, even to a point since they've played following the All-Star break, this has not been a terrifically good baseball team. They've been average to mediocre to below average a lot of the time so far here over the last few weeks. And this series against the Washington Nationals certainly started off that way. The beginning of the series started with the Nationals basically waving the white flag. And I think it was Jim Salisbury from NBC Sports Philadelphia. I don't know if he wrote the headline or if it was in the story, but I remember seeing it in a tweet from NBC Sports Philadelphia where it said Nationals raised the white flag and then beat the Phillies over the head with it. And that's what happened in the first game. We're going to get into the first two games of this series because it was two of the most depressing games the Phillies have played so far this season. But Aaron Nola rides to the rescue, everybody. I think the Phillies followed up their worst loss of the season on Wednesday with their best win of the season on Thursday afternoon at Nationals Park. The Nola versus Max Scherzer pitching matchup was as advertised. It was every bit as good as everyone was hoping it would be. These two Cy Young candidates coming together and absolutely owning fools for the majority of the ball game. This really was kind of a historic matchup. It's been a long, long time since two pitchers of this magnitude has faced each other in a situation like this. I mean, it's been a while. Yeah, this stat was on the TV broadcast. When Aaron Nola and Max Scherzer faced each other today, it was the first time since 1985 that two starters with an ERA under 2.25 and 150 innings faced off against each other. The last time was John Tudor and Dwight Gooden back in 1985. Folks, that's when I was cutting my teeth on the majors, and I remember Doc Gooden in the 80s. Man, that guy was the truth in the 1980s, and John Tudor was a really, really good left-handed pitcher for the Cardinals at that time. That was the year the Cardinals ended up, that was the year the Royals won the World Series, but the Cardinals got all the way to the Fall Classic that year. That was what a tremendous matchup, and that's what we saw in Washington, D.C. today with Nola and Scherzer, and Nola outpitched Max Scherzer today. It's the only way to put it. Nola further bolstered his MVP case and Cy Young case with a tremendous performance against the Nationals. It was really a beautiful performance by two masters of their craft. I mean, these are two guys at the absolute top of their game. And this is why starting pitchers, I feel like, are important. I hate the idea of starting pitching being marginalized in baseball. You're seeing a number of teams going with bullpenning to start games, starting games with a relief pitcher for the first inning or two, and then moving on to a starting pitcher or a guy that you only think you're going to get four or five innings out of after that. I understand that it's a good strategy in some ways, but you lose something with that. And I think in modern baseball now, as we really stress bullpens, we lose these kinds of matchups. We just don't see pitchers coming together and having matchups like this. This just shows the value of tremendous starting pitching. And both guys just absolutely pitched their butts off in this one. But this is why I love starting pitchers so much. There's nothing better than two guys like this going at it inning after inning after inning. It's rare in baseball. It's just rare that you see this kind of a performance, this kind of a matchup. Really, everything broke when Odubel Herrera finally broke through against Max Scherzer in the seventh inning with a huge two-run home run, his 20th on the season. By the way, the Phillies now have five players with 20 or more home runs this year. Hoskins with 25, Franco with 21, Justin Bour with 20, Asdrubal Cabrera with 20, and Odubel Herrera with 20. Carlos Santana has 18, and Nick Williams has 17. And they have 35 more games to catch up and join that 20-homer club. But that Odubel Herrera home run, that was a big home run for Herrera, who, as we all know, has struggled mightily over the last few months. And his future in Philadelphia, I think, is tenuous. We talked a little bit about it on the Sunday Night Podcast, episode number 205. I think his future here in Philadelphia is tenuous. It all depends on what they're looking to do in the offseason with free agency. I think Odubel Herrera's chances of staying are better if the Phillies get Manny Machado and they decide not to pursue Bryce Harper. But if they get Bryce Harper, they're going to have to make some tough decisions. They're either going to have to move Carlos Santana and take Rhys Hoskins out of left field, put him at first base, and keep Nick Williams and Odubel Herrera in the outfield, or they're going to have to move Herrera. Because Herrera has not shown a lot these last few months, but we know he's got a history of bouncing back from stretches of lack of production, and we haven't seen a slump like this from Herrera in quite a while. But maybe this is the launching pad. Maybe this gets him out of it. An upper tank shot off of Max Scherzer to give the Phillies their only runs of the game, the only runs they'd need, because Aaron Nola shoved today, guys. I mean, what a tremendous performance. 8 shutout innings, lowered his ERA to 2.13 on the season, gave up 5 hits, 1 walk, and 9 strikeouts. He and Scherzer now, coincidentally, both have 2.13 ERAs. And the biggest at-bat of the game, without question, was the at-bat in the bottom of the 8th inning when the Nationals were threatening. Nola's pitch count was climbing over 100, and he should have had the previous batter struck out on a pitch. It was a matter of, well, it was a strike. I tweeted it out. The called third strike was, I think it was Adam. Was it Adam Eaton that the pitch was on? I can't remember now who the. Oh, it was Turner. It was Trey Turner that he was hitting it, that he was pitching against, and did not get the call. And so that brought up Bryce Harper with 2 on and 2 out. The Phillies holding a 2-0 lead, and then behind in the count 2-1, he dials up 194-mile-an-hour fastball that Harper swung through, and then a 95-mile-an-hour piece of nasty cheese that Harper swung through again to strike out one of the most dangerous hitters in that lineup. And after that, Pat Nashek got the final 3 outs. I would have liked to have seen Nola come out, but that 8th inning was stressful, and I think the Phillies were probably thinking Nola probably gave that last pitch to Harper everything he had. I think that was probably max effort. He maxed out on that pitch, and maybe it's a little dangerous to send a pitcher back out after he's done that. I mean, some pitchers might be able to just mow the next 3 guys down, but the fact that they didn't bring him out, I was a little disappointed, but Pat Nashek did the job, as he almost always does. Pat Nashek closed the door, and Aaron Nola put together his signature performance in a Phillies uniform. This was easily his finest performance in a Phillies uniform. There may be other starts where he had better game scores or something, but this was against an opponent that was fighting for its very survival. That at-bat essentially could have been the difference in both of these team seasons. Because if Bryce Harper had come through with a 3-run home run there, the Nationals sweep the Phillies. No doubt in my mind, the Nationals sweep the Phillies and move 3.5 games behind the Phils in the National League East, and they have all the momentum. And the Phillies are crushed once again. One night after suffering a crushing walk-off loss to the Nationals, it would have happened again. Not a walk-off, but in the 8th inning, same difference, okay? I don't know if the Phillies would have been able to bounce back. They've been resilient this year, but there have been better teams felled by circumstances than what the Phillies would have had to come back from if Bryce Harper had managed to come through. But Aaron Nola, with that strikeout, I think in part saved the Phillies season and at the same time squashed the Nationals' chances of making a run here in the National League East. The Nationals needed a sweep. They really did need a sweep. And so now they're back to 6.5 games, 5.5 games behind the Phillies. Their time is running out, and the Phillies got a little bit of a springboard after 2 horrific games, you know? Now, I do want to talk, before I move on to the other 2 games, about Aaron Nola, because it seems to me that his MVP case might be a little bit better than his Cy Young case. And I know that there has never been a pitcher in Major League history that has won the MVP without winning the Cy Young. But hear me out on this. I have never been someone who likes the idea that an MVP has to come from a winning team or a team that's in the playoffs. But if you are a voter out there who believes that you want the MVP to be a contributor for a playoff team, and you're also someone who looks at the MVP in a way that says, who is the most valuable player to their team? Aaron Nola is more valuable to the Phillies than Max Scherzer is to the Nationals or Jacob deGrom is to the Mets. Not only that, the Nationals and the Mets are both pretty much done in the playoff race here. Aaron Nola is the only one of these 3 guys who is going to continue to be putting up high-stress innings. Now, maybe the Nationals still. They're on the periphery. I think I saw today they have something like a 9% chance of making the postseason, according to Fangraphs. That's not very much. It's extremely low, but it's still there. It's a chance. There have been teams with worse percentages at this time of the year to come through and make it. Look at the Phillies back in 2007. Okay, so it's possible, but the Phillies are more in the hunt than the Nationals and the Mets. And if you're someone who believes that you want a player who is the most important player to that team and they're in the playoff hunt, Aaron Nola makes more sense as an MVP candidate than Jacob deGrom or Max Scherzer does. Now, the Cy Young Award is just supposed to go to the best pitcher or the pitcher who's had the best season, and that is Jacob deGrom right now. There's no doubt about the fact deGrom has had the best season. I think he is the leader in the clubhouse right now. for that particular award. And I still think Max Scherzer, even though Aaron Nola outdueled him today in Washington, D.C., you've got to look at this as more than just a one-game sample. This definitely helps Aaron Nola in the narrative. It definitely, I think, puts him neck and neck with Scherzer, whereas I think Scherzer was comfortably ahead at number two coming into this game. Aaron Nola established himself as a top three pitcher in the National League today. But I don't think it moves him ahead of Scherzer in the Cy Young race. And so I do think, in a way, and it's weird, that I think it makes him a more viable MVP candidate than it does a Cy Young candidate if you're looking at the MVP award in a certain way. And I've never liked that definition of MVP because that's the definition that people have always used to deny Mike Trout the MVP back in those first few seasons when he was continuously a runner-up. They dinged him because the Angels were never a playoff team, and they just vote, you know, the idiotic voters who didn't vote for Mike Trout in a lot of those years just didn't take into account the fact that it's not his fault that the rest of his team isn't good enough. It's not Jacob DeGrom's fault that the rest of his team isn't good enough to make the playoffs. It's not Max Scherzer's fault that his bullpen has collapsed and that his offense was inconsistent for much of the season, that the rest of his starting rotation specifically wasn't able to hold up their end of the bargain. And the more this goes on, I think we're seeing that there probably will be a position player who emerges as a favorite for MVP. And right now, I think that's Matt Carpenter of the Cardinals. With as hot as St. Louis has been, and as great as he has been since the middle of May, Matt Carpenter, I think he would get my vote right now. Matt Carpenter would get my vote for MVP. I would have Aaron Nola number two, though. I think Aaron Nola is going to get a couple of second and third place votes for MVP, and I think they're warranted based on what he's done. I'll just give you a couple of stats to further prove my point. The Phillies are 19-7 in Aaron Nola starts this year. They are 50-51 when he does not. That, folks, is an MVP.
This ball is out of here.
All right, well, let's talk about the other two games real quick. I know we don't want to spend a whole lot of time on these because these two games were as brutal as it gets. In the first game, the Phillies lost 10-4. They took a 4-1 lead, and then half an inning later gave it right back up in the middle innings after a long rain delay. Victor Arano uncharacteristically blew it in this one. Arano has been so good for the Phillies, a very underrated part of this bullpen. Nobody talks about Arano, but he has been lights out. He actually, the inning before, did a tremendous job coming in for Hector Neris and getting out of a bases-loaded jam. And then I don't like it when a manager brings a relief pitcher back out for a second inning after they've gotten them out of a big jam the previous inning. I think you have that adrenaline rush from doing that, and then coming out and starting an inning, there's obviously a letdown in the adrenaline. And I think emotionally, there's an emotional component that goes along with that I think hurt Arano there. In the second game, the Phillies lost 8-7 on the walk-off home run by Ryan Zimmerman. It looked like the Phillies were going to have a hard-fought victory. They scored early in that game. They were up 4-1, but they ended up blowing the lead, but then just kept inching ahead of the Nationals little bit by little bit. They took a 7-5 lead in the eighth inning on a solo home run from Cesar Hernandez that gave them a little cushion. Nashak gave a run back in the bottom of the eighth inning. In the top of the ninth, the Phillies had a chance to really add a ton of insurance. They had the bases loaded and could not convert. Bases loaded with one out, and as Drubal Cabrera, who the Phillies acquired to come through in situations like that because they were tired of seeing Scott Kingery not come through in situations like that, as Drubal Cabrera popped out to the third baseman in that position. And Cabrera simply he's not been good since he came to Philadelphia. He's hitting just barely over 200 since arriving with the Phillies. He has two home runs, but he has not looked good out there, and he's been a minus defensively. Scott Kingery was a better defender than Asdrubal Cabrera at shortstop, but the hope was that you'd live with the defense if he gives you that 800-plus OPS that he was giving for the Mets earlier this year. Right now, that's not happening. Now, maybe he gets hot. He has been good all season long, and he's been one of the most improved hitters in baseball over the last couple of years. But on Wednesday night, he did not come through, continuing a trend since he put on a Phillies uniform. But the Phillies still had a 7-6 lead going into the bottom of the ninth. Sir Anthony Dominguez came on, got the first two outs, and then gave up a two-strike double to Juan Soto that just was on the inside of that foul line, and then allowed a walk-off home run to Zimmerman. It was the third time in his career that Zimmerman has hit a walk-off home run against the Phillies. This guy can't retire soon enough. I mean, seriously, Zimmerman, get out of the league. I'm sick and tired of watching Ryan Zimmerman kill the Phillies late in games. And, you know, we have the recency bias of, was this the worst game of the Philly season this year? You know, every time, you know, the Cubs' grand slam loss felt like a true dagger into the heart. And there have been a million others. There's been a lot of them lately. This one was really hard to take. I don't know that I'd call it their worst loss, because I don't want, because if another one happens 2 weeks from now, that one will be the worst loss. But when you have a 9-7 lead in the eighth and you bring in your closer, the once untouchable Sir Anthony Dominguez, who is now very touchable, it was a brutal loss. A brutal loss to a team that just a day before had given up by trading Daniel Murphy and Matt Adams. So there is concern now about Sir Anthony Dominguez. I think Dominguez he's no longer the lock to be the closer of this team, given how he's pitched lately. And this is not unexpected. He's a young guy. He only pitched 3 innings at AAA this year. He was in AA for the majority of the season. And they rode him hard when he first got up here. I mean, they rode him hard because they had no one else. This was at a time when no one else in the bullpen was reliable. They needed Sir Anthony Dominguez to keep them afloat, and that's what he did. He still has a 2.66 ERA on the season, but from his debut through July 22nd, 34 innings, he had a 1.59 ERA and was striking out 11.4 batters per nine. So he was their best reliever. You could see why he was getting the ninth inning. And last night he was going up against, Harper Rendon Soto. That's what it was. Harper Rendon Soto. That's who he was going up against. And he got Harper and Rendon, but once Soto came up, that was the beginning of the end. Since that outing on July 22nd, in 10 innings, Sir Anthony Dominguez has a 6.30 ERA and is also walking 6.3 batters per nine. He's given up 3 home runs over that time. So there's an issue here. Hector Neris is back, pitching pretty well, but I'll never trust him in the closer's role again. They may be forced to use him in some of those spots. I think Pat Nashak is going to be the guy that they use in a lot of those spots. And I hope we don't see Tommy Hunter in those spots a whole lot, but they seem to like putting Tommy Hunter into big situations. The bullpen is dealing with some different injuries and stuff, which I'll get into in just a minute, but I think with Sir Anthony Dominguez, they've got to be careful with him and figure out what the heck is going on with his slider. His slider has flattened out. It doesn't have nearly as much drop as it had been having earlier in the season. I think he's just wearing out. I think the kid is just absolutely wearing out. And so those were two crushing losses to the Nationals before the game on Thursday. And, you know, when the Phillies won on Thursday, I saw some smugness from people. Well, you know, guess we're not going to throw dirt on the Phillies season just yet. Let's not pretend that criticism of the Phillies and doubting their chances coming into the game on Thursday was unwarranted, okay? Listen, this team has not been good lately. The Braves swept the Pirates, and coming into the game had a 3-game lead on the Phillies. With the win, the Phillies closed it to 2.5, but the Braves beat the Marlins 5-0 here on Thursday night, and so the lead is back up to 3 games. The Phillies lost two games to the Braves in this series, so the Braves are 3 games up on the Phils, and the Phils are trending in the wrong direction. Okay. The team is 16-16 since the All-Star break. There's trouble at the closer position. There's trouble throughout the lineup. All of a sudden now, you're worried about the inconsistencies of Vince Velasquez and Nick Pivetta. Zach Eflin did not look good in this series. You've got issues on this team. They'd lost 4 in a row coming into this game. They'd lost 10 out of their last 15 coming into the finale. 16-16 since the All-Star break after the win, and they've been outscored by 16 runs here in the second half of the season. And they'd fallen 3 games behind the Braves, and they were allowing a dead team walking to beat them. They lost 3 out of 5 to the stinking Mets. They'd lost a series in Cincinnati and San Diego recently. And the acquisitions that they got at the trade deadline either weren't producing like Cabrera, or they're on the disabled list, or just battling nagging injuries. Wilson Ramos didn't play at all in the series because he traveled back to Philadelphia for an MRI on his hand. Now, luckily, it turned out to be nothing serious. He hopes to be in the lineup on Friday in the series against the Blue Jays. But Ramos has barely played. When he's played, he's been great. But he's barely played since the acquisition. All right, the Phillies had to place Justin Bour on the disabled list this week because of a strained oblique. The day after his best game of the season, which was on Wednesday night when he hit a home run and had an RBI, was it a single or a double? I don't remember it now, but Justin Bour had an excellent game. He's on the disabled list. And he hadn't done much since coming to Philadelphia. We all know about Cabrera. Aaron Loop is on the disabled list, and he might not be back for a long while. It's why the Phillies had to trade for Luis Avilan this week from the White Sox to get a left-handed reliever to replace Loop. So this is, and Edobre Ramos is now on the disabled list as well. This team has problems. They have issues. They've been able to battle through a lot of issues so far this year, but this may be a bridge too far for this team. This is a young team. And I know Rhys Hoskins said before the game on Thursday that, you know, after the crushing loss, you know, these guys are going to battle. They're all going to battle. Tommy Hunter said a lot of the same stuff too. Maybe they will. And their chances of entering the postseason are still decent. Fangraphs has it at 52% to make it. But that's lower than the Cardinals, Brewers, and Dodgers right now. And they say the Phillies have a 38.4% chance to win the division. The Phillies were over 50% just a week ago. How quickly things can change. And real quick about the Avilan trade, this is going to be a big help against left-handers because lefties are batting .214 against him with an OPS of .562 this year. He'd held lefties to a .195 average and a .571 OPS last year, 2016. More of the same, a .200 average and a .519 OPS against lefties. He's also under team control for another year. Eligible for arbitration, which I imagine he'll get a bump up to about $4 to $5 million. And the bullpen has had trouble getting out left-handers this year. They've allowed a 3.22 weighted on base average against lefties and had a 4.17 ERA, both of which ranked 16th in baseball. They've allowed 68 home runs to left-handers this year, seventh most in baseball. So Luis Avilan will absolutely help this team. But in the meantime, this team has some issues. And they were on full display in the first two games against the Washington Nationals. Aaron Nola saved them. Aaron Nola was the stopper. He was the Cy Young MVP, number one ace, whatever you want to call him. Aaron Nola was all of it and more on Thursday afternoon against Max Scherzer. He lived up to the hype. He lived up to the billing. And for one day at least, he had Phillies fans not ready to throw themselves off a bridge.
This ball is out of here!
Well, the Phillies are obviously in the midst of a tight battle in the National League East here with the Atlanta Braves and, you know, maybe the Washington Nationals, but they are also in a death struggle in the National League for the two wild card spots. And it's anybody's ball game at the moment as there are a ton of teams all packed together. And joining me to talk about the Phillies in the National League is my good friend Mike Farren from SiriusXM. And, of course, he's also now working for the Arizona Diamondbacks doing their radio pregame show. And Mike's an old friend of the podcast, and we haven't had him on for a while, so I'm extremely happy to talk to Mike again. Mike, thanks for coming on Hitting Season again. How are you, buddy?
It's good to be with you, Jim.
Now, are you doing the pre and the post game out there?
Yeah, I do pre and post, and then fill in on about 25 games of play-by-play.
Nice. Nice. And you're still at SiriusXM Radio as well. What's the show you're on there now?
Still on Power Alley, which is the same one that I have been on. So that's on 10 to 1 Eastern Time. Me and Jim Duquette. I'm on most days of the week. I would say every day except for Thursdays, generally.
Yeah, SiriusXM Channel 209, by the way, in case you're wondering. But I wanted to talk to Mike about the National League, and we'll get to the D-backs and the National League West, the National League Central, in just a minute. But first, I wanted to get your thoughts on what Aaron Nola did today, because you know we're all talking about it here in Philly's land. And, you know, I kind of wanted to run something a little bit nutty by you, and I realize this probably isn't going to happen, but my contention is that Nola right now is actually a better MVP candidate than he is a Cy Young candidate when you factor in the Nationals and Mets may not be competing for a playoff spot. Certainly the Mets aren't. The Nationals are just barely hanging on the periphery. And I don't know that there's of those three pitchers, like if it's not going to be a position player like Matt Carpenter or something like that, I think Nola has the best MVP argument out of the three because he's so important to the Phillies and because the Phillies are a potential playoff team. What am I crazy on that, thinking that he might have a better MVP shot than a Cy Young shot right now?
I mean, I'm not sure that it's ever happened in history. I don't know my history, I guess, of the awards well enough. I'm not a big awards guy, so.
I don't think it has.
So, I mean, I think if you're going to use history as a guide, I highly doubt that since the Cy Young Award came into effect that there's been a pitcher that's won the MVP award and not won the Cy Young. So I would say that it's probably unlikely. I mean, I do think that he's a legitimate candidate for the Cy Young Award. I think that, when you start stacking him up against Scherzer and DeGrom, he stacks up favorably. And I think, this idea that you have to be on a contending team in order to garner MVP consideration. Personally, I think it's bunk. I think it's playing fast and loose with what the definition of value actually is.
Yeah.
And doing so and creating more limitations for yourself as voters just to try and fit a predetermined narrative that you've created. And so I hate that argument about it. Now, depending on who ends up voting for the National League MVP, because it does vary year to year, who knows? Maybe it'll be more people that are more aligned to my thinking. Maybe it'll be more aligned in the thinking that you have to have played for a winner in order to do it. But there's no rhyme or reason to that award over the course of history, no matter what people say about, you've got to play for a contender. Well, here's that you had to play for a contender, and you didn't necessarily have to put up the best numbers in the league
right, or
close to the best numbers in the league. And there were other times where you had to be the best player in the league in order to win it. So I think it's probably safer to say that he's a Cy Young candidate. And, listen, he won a pretty great head-to-head matchup with Max Scherzer. And that was a great game today. Scoreless into, the seventh before Herrera homered, and then for him to strike out Harper with the game on the bases to end the eighth. I mean, those are some really big boy moments for a guy who's turned into a pretty dominant starting pitcher.
Yeah, when he first got drafted, nobody expected him to be able to throw 95 up in the zone on Bryce Harper to strike him out. He was not projected to be that kind of a guy. And I hear what you're saying about the MVP argument. I have never liked that argument either, because that's the argument that kept Mike Trout from winning it those years when he was clearly the deserving player in a couple of those seasons. And so I'm playing a little bit fast and loose with my own history here, but I was trying to craft an argument because I know some writers, that's how they look at this MVP award. But I agree with you. I think what he did today was absolutely kind of catapult himself as a legitimate Cy Young candidate, because he was clearly running number three to Jacob DeGrom and Max Scherzer, and DeGrom pitched outstanding here on Thursday as well. So it's probably still DeGrom in the lead. Do you think Nola's performance, does a head-to-head matchup, how much does that factor into the fact that Scherzer has the edge in a lot of the statistics, like the strikeouts and the opponent batting average and the whip? It's not a big lead, but it's there for Scherzer right now.
Yeah, I don't know that the head-to-head matchup matters. It may matter in the mind of one voter, which, who knows, that could be enough to tip the tables. But I think all of that gets overblown. I mean, you're looking at the guy's work in the average, right? So,
yeah.
And I think, again, it depends on what the voters want. But, I mean, I'm not a voter. I'm not a member of the Baseball Writers Association of America. The Cy Young Award is their award. And so it's tough for me to try and guess. I mean, that's one of the frustrating things. Let's start with this. It's August 23rd, right? I think we're still about 3 weeks too early to be discussing awards.
Sure.
Really. I mean, I think you're probably, like, the last 2 weeks of the regular season is probably a good time to start really discussing that. So there's that. And two, I think, that there are stats that are probably, more traditional, modern traditional definers, right? So innings pitch, strikeouts, earned run average are probably more important than the win total or the winning percentage. But I do think that because Scherzer has the edge in those categories, that he's probably still the favorite among the three, even more so, even though, DeGrom's ERA is sub two, I think it's going to be very difficult for voters to vote for him because, he spent a little bit of time on the disabled list, and Scherzer has been both durable and dominant this season.
Yeah. Well, and you're right. There's still a whole nother 5 weeks of season left to be played, and a lot can happen in the meantime. It's just kind of some fun barroom talk, I guess. But if you're talking about the more serious aspect of the game today that the Phillies played against the Nationals had beaten the Phillies, I think they would have jumped into this race with both feet, even having traded Daniel Murphy and Matt Adams at the start of the series. The Phillies stopped the bleeding a little bit, but even with this start by Nola, and even with the 2-0 win on Thursday, the Phillies have struggled lately. They've lost 10 out of their last 16, and it felt coming into the game like the Phillies were leaking oil a little bit, and Aaron Nola basically just kind of put a finger in the hole to stop the oil from coming out. But, you know, Jake Arrieta's got to take the ball tomorrow, and he's been pretty good, but he's clearly not at the level that Nola was today. Do you see the Phillies as having enough to make the postseason right now? I know they're in the conversation, but what's your gut about this team?
Yeah, I mean, I felt like because of their pitching that they probably were in a better position than Atlanta was overall. But Atlanta, you know, I was really concerned about Atlanta after that sweep at the hands of Colorado, but that was going to turn things for them. Then they go to Pittsburgh, they sweep. But I think it's actually a pretty good Pirates team. Mm-hmm. I think it was a poorly timed cold stretch for the Phillies. I certainly don't think they're out of it. What, 2.5 games back coming into play tonight with Atlanta playing in Miami? They need to start playing better on the road. I know they have 3 in Toronto this weekend, so they get a second division team in there before they come home. And again, the Washington and the Cubs, and there are a fair amount of home games that are left on their schedule. By the time they play Washington again, September 10th, you know, the Nationals could have fewer players and be further out of the race.
Yeah.
So that might be a chance for them to get some ground. So I don't think that they're out of it. I certainly don't think they're out of the second wild card mix. But I do think that it's important. They're going to start needing to get some help from somebody else. You know, they need to be in a position where, to me, they're within the range that they are right now, 2-3 games. You know, it's final 11 games of the season. And those games are really important for them. They go 4-2 Atlanta, 4-2 Colorado, who they could be battling for a playoff spot, yeah, and then host Atlanta for 3 to end the year. Hmm. That, to me, is, you know, you're looking at, you know, that's what the next 20 games, you basically have to hold serve or pick up a little bit of ground between the Phillies. And I do think they're capable of it, at the very least, holding serve.
Yeah, and the fact that the team they're chasing, the Atlanta Braves, is a lot like them, a young team that's kind of playing over their heads a little bit. I agree with you. That Colorado series, especially after that game they blew on Saturday night when they were up 3-0 with 2 outs in the ninth and then ended up losing 5-3 in 10 innings, I thought that was going to be a death knell. And they showed some good bounce-back ability, Atlanta did. And they've got some young stars on that team, Mike. I mean, Ronald Acuna has just – he was kind of just – middling along, kind of plodding along, and then all of a sudden here in the month of August, he decided, okay, I'm going to go full superstar all of a sudden, and got moved into the leadoff spot. And, you know, you couple him with Freddie Freeman, who is a legitimate National League MVP candidate, and a couple of really good young starters on that team. I think Atlanta has some more high-end talent than the Phillies do right now, but again, both still so young, and like you said, they have 7 head-to-head games coming up at the end of September.
Right, and I think that's the biggest thing, is that there's still games left. And, you know, listen, Atlanta is a far superior offensive team, I think, to where the Phillies are.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest thing that they have going for them. And they've done good work out of their bullpen, maybe with the exception of that series against Colorado. But they have gotten better bullpen work than anticipated. Kevin Gausman has been terrific for them.
Yeah.
So maybe that helps to mitigate it a little bit. But I really do feel like the Phillies have the better pitching. And the one thing that the Phillies don't have that matches their pitching is the run prevention defense.
The defense is terrible.
The Braves are a much better defensive team. I mean, the Phillies are well below average. I think as a team defensively. So they're going to have to make up for that with some strikeouts and probably some timely walks and homers.
Yeah, that's what the pitching has done so far this year, is get the strikeouts. When you've got Nola, Pivetta, and Velasquez, they bail their defense out quite a bit, but it has been a major problem this year at different points. Let's jump around to your division here, Mike. The National League West and the Diamondbacks, as we record this, have a slight lead on the Colorado Rockies, and we see the Dodgers in third place right now. I was looking at Fangraph's percentage to make the playoffs, their projections, and they have actually the Rockies at 43%, the Dodgers at 55.5%, even though the Rockies have a couple of games up on the Dodgers as we record covered this, but first let's start off with you in Arizona. The D-backs, when the Phillies came in there a couple of weeks ago, Arizona really played them well, and that's a team that also has some really good pitching, and Paul Goldschmidt, a National League MVP candidate every single year, he has really bounced back from a slow start. Can the Diamondbacks hold off the Rockies and the Dodgers in the West, Mike?
It's going to be a challenge, but I think they're capable of it. I mean, the one thing they have is going to the final 35 games of the season. They do have a game advantage on Colorado. They still have 7 head-to-head games left with both Colorado and Los Angeles. And they have the toughest schedule of the three, but, you know, the toughest schedule in the National League, that's a lot of National League teams against you that are similar in record. I mean, we have, what, eight teams separated by 6.5 games from the Cubs to the Dodgers. In terms of what their record is anyway. So, I mean, it's a very, very tight race. And so the Diamondbacks are playing a lot of teams that are similar to that. They're going to have to play well against those teams. They play very, very good defense. They are probably the best defensive team in the National League, top to bottom. And as you mentioned, they pitch very well. And the offense, you know, the offensive numbers in the season overall don't look very good, in a large part because you know, they lost 15 out of 17 in the month of May, where they average fewer than 2 runs a game. And that really is what has put them in this position now this year, because they had a 6-game lead in the division on May 1st. They've, you know, kind of whittled that away.
Yeah, right.
To this point, right? I mean, they've lost 5 games over the last 4 months to Colorado in the end. And the thing is that they're now back, you know, 15 games over 500. At the end of May, they were 27-27. But they are the number one run-scoring team in the National League since the start of play on Memorial Day. So it has been a better offense. They made a key acquisition, I think, in Eduardo Escobar at the trade deadline, who's a really, really good player. It's having a career year, too. They got him from the Twins, good defender, who, you know, switch hitter, really crushes right-handed pitching, lots of doubles, few home runs, good at bats. And I think that's lengthened out a lineup with, you know, Goldschmidt, who I think should be in the National League MVP discussion, you know, in a couple of weeks if he continues the way he's going now. You know, A.J. Pollock, who had a great first 6 weeks of the season, and David Peralta, who I think is probably in the running for.
Oh, man, he killed the Phillies, Mike. I don't want to hear David Peralta's name ever again. That guy killed the Phillies when they were in town. That was unbelievable what he did.
9 home runs now in the month of August after one yesterday, and he is having the best season of his career, and he's been probably the most consistent offensive performer this year. So I think it's a good team. I think it certainly has its flaws. I think there's some questions about overall offensive utility. It's a little bit more of a no-name bullpen. They don't miss bats. They're more of a ground ball bullpen overall, maybe with the exception of Archie Bradley. And your former friend Jake Diekman, who you know, certainly can get some strikeouts with his stuff. But I do think that they are, you know, they have put themselves in a position where if they can win, you know, 20 of their last 35, which I don't think is out of the realm of possibility, that they very well could win the National League West.
I think the big, aside from the Rockies surge here over the last few weeks or so, I mean, with that, I didn't really see that coming because their offense has struggled so much so far this year, but really taking advantage of the Dodgers. When they got Manny Machado, you just thought that the Dodgers, okay, now they've got the best roster in the National League. You really thought that they were going to go on a run, and it just hasn't happened. Certainly Kenley Jansen missing some time really hurt that bullpen, but can you diagnose for me a little bit further, like what is going on with the Dodgers and why it just doesn't seem like they can get their footing right now?
Sure. Well, I mean, I think, you know, if you look at it from a roster management standpoint, Machado basically replaced Corey Seager, who they had been without for, you know, most of the season. And that was a perennial MVP candidate. So it was almost like they were back to full strength because, you know, Seager underwent Tommy John surgery in May and you know, obviously was out for the year. And now I believe had a second surgery, which is or something like that. That's, you know, going to keep him sidelined. He'll be ready for next season, but he's, you know, he's out. So I think that was more about that. I think, you know, part of the issue that they've had is that Max Muncy came back down to earth a little bit. It was one of the huge stories of the first half.
Right.
Matt Kemp has come back down to earth a little bit after a monster first half and landed him on the All-Star team. You know, he has not performed to the same level. Kike Hernandez has not had the same year that he had last year. The peripherals on Chris Taylor are still pretty positive, although I don't think that the counting stats necessarily look the same for him. So I think that's part of what's happened with them offensively. And then they just don't have the same quality in the bullpen. You know, the last couple of years, they found Joe Blanton and Brandon Morrow that have been those really consistent, good bridge guys to Kenley Jansen, and they haven't had that. And I mean, they thought they were going to get that with Maeda and Stripling when they moved the children to the pen, and then Stripling went right back on the disabled list as soon as he had been activated. So, and they'll probably get Stripling back in short order, but they've missed him, you know, for the last couple of weeks. And
right.
I think he was a very valuable pitcher for them, both as a starter where he made the All-Star team and as a reliever. And in the first month of the season when they were really struggling, Stripling was their most reliable relief pitcher too. So so I think that those are a couple of the things that have really gone on with L.A. and kind of put this position. And they missed Justin Turner for a check of time, but every National League contender has seemingly been without one of their key bats for an extended stretch, except maybe the Phillies. The Phillies lineup has actually been pretty healthy throughout the course of the year, right? I mean, that's they haven't really had one of their key middle of the lineup guys out. So, and Atlanta, I guess, really hasn't even, they had a tune out for a month early in the year. But other than that, they haven't had a whole lot. But most of the other ones have had key injuries that have impacted their lineup. And Los Angeles certainly has been that too. So, I think all of those probably factor into it. I wouldn't count them out. I mean, they still have 34 games left. They're 5 games back in the loss column from the division. It's not insurmountable, but they're going to need to start finding some ways to make up ground. You get the Padres this weekend, and the Padres are offensively challenged, and maybe that helps to get the Dodgers right a little bit. But it's made for a good race because I'll tell you what. You think about Colorado's lack of offense, but they can pitch. Their starting pitching is really, really good.
Yeah.
And the fact that they consistently go deeper into games has made that bullpen better.
Yeah. No, and that's what they focused on in recent off seasons was really strengthening that bullpen because the worry is always that the starters can't go deep when they're playing at Coors Field. But like you mentioned, very strange that a Colorado team, the strength really is in their rotation and with their relief pitchers in their arms and not in their bats. And it's led them to a 70-57 record. They right now they hold the second wild card spot. They're half a game behind the Cardinals, and they tried to help out the Phillies last weekend by taking all those games against Atlanta, but obviously the Phils couldn't take advantage. But that's a tight race in the National League West. And we move over to the Central, and we see the Cardinals have just been on a rampage. I mean, I think what I like what the Cardinals did is that they decided to turn things over to some of the young guys and let the young guys try and kind of take the mantle a little bit. And sometimes that means you take a step backward. In the case of the Cardinals here, it means they've kind of taken a step forward a little bit. And, of course, they're being led by the guy who I think is probably the leader in the clubhouse right now for MVP, and that's Matt Carpenter, who has, early in his career, was a doubles hitter. He has, home run totals in the single digits to being one of the biggest sluggers in the National League, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, I think what Matt Carpenter has done is, I mean, listen, this guy's been a really quality offensive performer for a number of years, maybe with the exception of 2017. And when you look at that on May 12th, May 15th, he was hitting .140. I mean, what he's done since then is pretty remarkable. I think, he and Paul Goldschmidt have had probably the two biggest turnarounds offensively of anybody in baseball. I know Goldschmidt was hitting .190 at the end of about .98, I think, on May 22nd, and that is now close to .300. Carpenter is at 270, 383, 575 slugging percentage. He's slugged .680 since the middle of May. So it's been a tremendous turnaround for him. And, he really helps to make that offense go. And they've done it with injuries to Marcell Ozuna, who, he just went on the disabled list, but he's been playing through a shoulder issue all year that clearly has sapped his power. They were without their shortstop and Paul DeYoung for 12 weeks. And you're right, they have turned it over to some youthful energy. And Harrison Bader has played a tremendous field for them defensively. I think he's exceeded expectations from the way scouts evaluated him just based on the way that he's played so far. And they have very good young starting pitching. I think that's the other part of it. And that they had that through the course of the year too. Jack Flaherty was pretty brilliant last night. He has been very good. So I think all of those things kind of factor into why the Cardinals are where they are. Now, this is clearly the hottest stretch. At some point, they're not going to win 14 out of 18 all year long, or 15 out of 19 all year long.
Yeah.
They certainly put themselves in a position where they can win a playoff berth, whether it be the wild card or the division, because they are just 2.5 back of the Cubs.
Yeah, Miles Michaelis, a really underrated signing in the offseason by the Cardinals. That has worked out tremendously for them. I think going into the season, we thought the Cubs and the Brewers would both be major players here. And, of course, the Cubs, having just picked up Daniel Murphy, they made themselves a little bit stronger. They, again, like you said, hold a slight lead in the National League Central. But the Brewers are still there. And, you know, I kind of – the Brewers are a fun team to watch. I think that's a team that really is driven by their offense. I think the starting pitching, I still look at that starting pitching for Milwaukee, and I don't see how they get it done a lot of the times, but they do have that back of the bullpen that just wipes teams out. And so that race, that too, that National League Central race is just up in the air with the Cubs and the Brewers.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, I mean, it's the Cubs, the Brewers, and the Cardinals now.
Well, yeah,
that
too.
Brewers have come back down to earth. Yeah, I mean, I think what's interesting is that the Brewers have won as many games since Memorial Day as the Cincinnati Reds have. They got off to a fast start, and their offense has not been what I think we expected it would be over the course of the season. And their bullpen has started to fade a little bit here in the second half, and that to me is a big key for them, because that was clearly the group that was carrying them through the first half on the pitching side. You know, their starters are actually okay. They're kind of a middle of the pack rotation. They're not sexy, but they get the job done. But they really need their bullpen to pitch well if they're going to get to the playoffs. And they have tried to add as much offense as they can in the moves that they made from Mike Moustakas and Jonathan Scope. They've weakened what's a really good defense at times by doing that. And I wonder if maybe they strayed a little bit too far from why they were being successful to get to that point where they were trying to have a little bit more offense, and they were sacrificing too much of their defense, which had been really good.
You know, I'll leave it on this here, Mike. I was reading something from MLB.com today where they were speculating about the possibility of an 8-way tie in the National League, because you've got 8 teams all within 7.5 games of each other right now. You count the division leaders, and the Cardinals and the Rockies and the Brewers are all tied for that top wild card spot. Actually, the Cardinals have a 1/2-game lead on the Rockies and the Brewers. The Phillies are 1 back, Dodgers 3.5, and even the Nationals still just 6.5 back, and you've got the Pirates at 7.5 back. It's still a jumbled mess in the National League, but as we've seen in years past, over the last month, these things tend, there seems to be some stretching that goes on. These standings that are so bunched up now at the end of August, they tend to expand a little bit. So I don't know. I'm all for chaos, but I think, you know, that kind of a playoff, a tiebreaker scenario would be a little bit too much chaos for me. How about you?
Well, I'm all for chaos. I mean, and especially if it's done in heavy doses. So I would be okay with having it be a little bit nuts. I prefer a 7-way tie, but since I do have bias with the Diamondbacks winning the division and letting everybody else fight it out
right
for a long time. I'm going to be well-rested and set the rotation. But, yeah, I mean, look, I think your point, and I think this is part of that article, too. It showed that this isn't that dissimilar to what happened 17 years ago in the National League, where there were 8 teams that were bunched together by record. And by the time we got to September 23rd, it had taken shape, right? Like we knew that there was, so we kind of had an idea of who the division winners were going to be. And I think that that's the possibility that we could see, you know, in the next 2.5 weeks or so. Yeah. The one thing I will say is there was an interesting comment, and Barry Sverlugo wrote a column in the Washington Post about a week ago. He was talking about the national struggles, and the number that he had was, since they've gone to the 2 wild card format in each league, 59 of the 63 teams that have won at least 87 games have gone on to the playoffs. And that's something to keep in mind. So your kind of baseline number is 87.
Okay.
And it's worth keeping an eye on that as you look to see how the National League plays out. If, in fact, it's going to be one of those years where, multiple teams miss it because of that. Or, I mean, I think it would be very difficult for more than, 6 or 7 teams total to have 87 wins in a single league. So that's something you just kind of keep your eye on, is you keep in the back of your mind, if you look at the Phillies right now, they're 18 wins from that total. You know, as you're kind of counting down, looking where that number is, there's another line that you kind of need to cross, likely to get into the postseason.
87 wins, guys. Okay, that's the number to be thinking about as we move forward. Mike Farron from SiriusXM, MLB Network Radio, host of Power Alley, and also of the Arizona Diamondbacks. Follow Mike on Twitter, folks, at Mike_Farron. Mike, thanks so much for coming back on Hittin' Season. I appreciate it.
This ball is out of here!
And now it's time for our stat of the week. A couple more Aaron Nola stats for you here, gang. This one from Megan Montemuro of The Athletic. Aaron Nola has never thrown a pitch in the ninth inning in his career. I thought that was going to change today. Looked like it was going to change. He had a low pitch count heading into the eighth inning, but again, ran into trouble. And probably, the more I think about it, the smart move. I would have let him come out to pitch the ninth inning until he allowed a base runner. But with only a two-run lead, you allow a base runner, all of a sudden the tying run comes to the plate. So I can understand playing it conservatively there. But it is amazing that Aaron Nola, as good as he has been, and this is just the way it is in baseball nowadays, nobody throws complete games now. Nola has never thrown a single pitch in the ninth inning of any game. And by the way, the last Phillies pitcher to throw a complete game shutout, Jeremy Hellickson. It's been a little while, gang. Also, the Phillies are 4-0 in Aaron Nola's last four starts. They are 3-10 in the 13 games started by others in that time span. Also, the Phillies 18-4 the last 22 times Aaron Nola has pitched. Folks, that'll do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Mike Farron for coming back on the podcast once again. If you haven't done so, gang, please, again, subscribe to the Good Fight podcast feed. Go to iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Find the Good Fight podcast feed and subscribe to it. That's how you will get Hittin' Season. And please give the podcast a 5-star rating and a review while you're at Apple Podcasts, iTunes, whatever it is you want to call it. That will help a lot. It'll help us out a lot in getting up those iTunes rankings once again. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you all next time right here on Hittin' Season.
Hey, everybody. How you doing? Well, that's good. My name is Bill Matz. I am the director of Fun and Games for Broad Street Hockey Radio Podcasts.
And I am Kelly, the deputy managing editor of BroadStreetHockey.com.
I'm Steph Driver, the NHL editorial manager for SB Nation.
And I am Charlie O'Connor, lead Flyers writer for TheAthletic.com.
And together we make up BSH Radio, one of the shows that you get at the SB Nation podcast family. We have a lot coming to you this year, and we want you to listen to our show. It is just an all Flyers, all the time show. So much content. I really hope you listen to it. It is a great piece of the SB Nation podcast family, along with all your other favorite sports.
We all love hockey, specifically the Flyers.
Let's go the Flyers.
The hockey team, the Flyers.